Welcome to Akatra Dialogue, a journey through timeless literature. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Akatra AI. We are diving deep today into a true literary giant. I mean, a novel that really kicked off the whole science fiction genre and still taps into so many of our modern anxieties. Mary Shelley's Frankenstein or the modern Prometheus.
Absolutely. It's the ultimate cautionary tale, isn't it? And the backstory is just incredible.
Right.
You have a picture at 1816, the year without a summer, super gloomy. Mary Shelley, who was what, barely 18?
Yeah, incredible.
Stuck in Villa Diodati in Switzerland with these huge literary figures, Lord Byron, Percy Shelley, her future husband. And they decide to have a ghost story contest.
Just like that. And boom, Frankenstein emerges. She was only 20 when it was published, anonymously at first in 1818.
Amazing. But, you know, that brilliance wasn't accidental. Her background is key.
Definitely. You've got Mary Wollstonecraft, the feminist pioneer, as her mother, and William Godwin, the radical philosopher, as her father.
Exactly. So her whole upbringing was steeped in these really progressive, challenging ideas about society, science, morality. Plus, she experienced quite a bit of personal tragedy herself.
Which you can really feel in the book, that sense of loss, of things going wrong.
Mm-hmm. And that gives Frankenstein its philosophical weight. It's so much more than just, you know, the B-movie monster.
For sure. So our mission today really is to get into that complexity, the tragedy of creation, of abandonment, going beyond the bolts in the neck, so to speak.
Right. And to grapple with the central question Shelley poses, what happens when ambition, that desire Victor has to divine secrets, to cheat death, isn't balanced by moral responsibility?
Okay, let's unpack this. Where do we start? With Victor.
Yeah, you have to start with the creator, Victor Frankenstein. His childhood in Geneva sounds pretty idyllic on the surface. Lots of love, privilege.
Mm-hmm.
But there's an intensity there from the start, focused on science.
And then the catalyst happens.
Right. His mother dies when he's 17. And that loss, it seems to be what really pushes him over the edge from just being interested in life sciences to this, well, obsession with conquering death itself.
So he heads off to university in Ingolstadt, dives headfirst into his studies, moving from older ideas, alchemy, into the really cutting-edge stuff of the time.
Modern chemistry, and particularly galvanism, using electricity on tissue. That was a real scientific fascination back then. And he isolates himself completely for 2 years, just driven by this single goal.
Until the moment arrives, the creation.
And this is where Shelley's genius is so apparent. She doesn't give us the how. There's no detailed explanation, no wiring diagram.
No science manual.
None. Instead, she focuses entirely on Victor's reaction.
Yeah.
The instant this 8-foot creature opens its dull yellow eye, Victor's feeling isn't triumph. It's
pure horror, disgust.
Exactly. Breathless horror and disgust. His dream instantly turns into a nightmare.
And he does the unthinkable. He runs.
He abandons his creation, just leaves it there, confused, alone, with no idea what's going on. It's the ultimate parental negligence.
A complete failure of responsibility from the very first second.
Which ties directly into that subtitle she insisted on, The Modern Prometheus.
Ah, right. Prometheus stole fire from the gods for humanity and was punished eternally.
Precisely. Victor steals the secret of life, the fire, but instead of bringing enlightenment or progress, it brings only suffering and destruction for him and everyone around him. It's a stark warning about unchecked scientific ambition, especially in that era of discovery.
Okay, so Victor abandons the creature. That act is central. But how do we, as readers, even get to know the creature's side of things? Because Victor's perspective is obviously biased.
Well, that's down to Shelley's incredibly sophisticated narrative structure. It's not just one story.
It's layered.
Exactly, like those Russian nesting dolls. You start out with Captain Walton's letters from the Arctic. He's writing home about his expedition.
Then Walton picks up Victor, who tells his story to Walton.
Right. And then, crucially, within Victor's narrative, there's this amazing section where they meet on a glacier and the creature gets to tell his own story in his own words.
That's brilliant. Because it forces you, the reader, to constantly question Victor. You know, how reliable is this guy, really, given everything he's done and feels?
Absolutely. It gives the creature agency, a voice. He gets to explain his experience, his feelings, his intellectual journey, which is astonishingly rapid.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because the creature's story is just devastating.
It truly is. He starts out like a newborn, essentially, but in this huge adult body, completely bewildered. But he's incredibly intelligent.
And he learns so quickly.
He finds refuge near this cottage, observes the De Lacy family, these poor exiled French aristocrats, in secret. And through watching them, he learns language, he learns about society, family, kindness.
And he learns to read. He finds those specific books.
Yes. Milton's Paradise Lost, Plutarch's Lives, Goethe's Sorrows of Young Werther. Think about that education.
Paradise Lost, especially. Seeing himself as both Adam and Satan.
Exactly. He develops this incredibly complex understanding of morality, heroism, deep emotion, loneliness.
Mm.
All from these texts and his observations.
Mm.
He becomes this sensitive, philosophical being who just craves connection.
And then he tries to make contact.
He finally works up the courage to approach the blind father, hoping for acceptance based on his words, not his looks. But the others return, see him, and...
instant terror, violence, rejection, just because of how he looks.
Purely prejudice. And that moment is the pivot. That absolute visceral rejection based on appearance alone, it poisons everything. His yearning turns into despair, and despair curdles into, well, calculated revenge.
And it is calculated, isn't it? The murders aren't random acts of rage.
Not at all. They're strategically designed to mirror his own suffering onto Victor. He targets those Victor loves most, aiming to isolate him completely.
First, Victor's young brother, William. Then he frames the innocent servant, Justine Moritz.
Right, ensuring she takes the fall, adding layers of guilt onto Victor. Then Victor's best friend, Henry Clerval.
And finally, the ultimate blow, Elizabeth Lavenza, Victor's beloved bride. Each one is meant to strip away Victor's connections, leaving him as alone as the creature feels.
Which brings us squarely to that central paradox. Who is the real monster in this story?
Yeah, because the creature, despite, you know, the way he looks, shows intelligence, deep feeling, even a sense of justice initially. While Victor...
Victor, the human, the creator, acts with profound moral cowardice time and time again.
That whole situation with Justine Moritz is just infuriating. He knows the creature killed William. He knows Justine is innocent.
But he says nothing. He lets her be tried, convicted, executed. Why? To protect his own reputation. To avoid revealing his monstrous secret.
It's utterly selfish and horrifying.
It really highlights the theme of responsibility. Or rather, Victor's complete lack of it. He's the negligent parent. The creature even says it, using Paradise Lost. I ought to be thy Adam, but I am rather the fallen angel.
He was made, then immediately cast out, blamed for his very existence, which was forced upon him.
Exactly. Shelley's arguing that creation, whether it's biological or maybe even technological, comes with a duty of care. You have to nurture what you make.
And the theme of isolation is just crushing for both of them.
Absolutely. Victor isolates himself with his secret, his guilt, his obsession. The creature is forcibly isolated by society's prejudice, by his appearance. They both end up consumed by hatred and revenge, trapped in this cycle.
The creature's plea for a companion, just one being like him, it underscores that basic human need for connection. Its absence is destructive.
And Shelley uses this to critique social prejudice, too. The creature is judged solely on looks. Justine is condemned by a flawed justice system, fueled by fear and Victor's silence. It suggests monstrosity isn't about appearance. It's about cruelty, selfishness, abandoning responsibility.
Okay, so moving towards the end, Victor actually agrees for a moment to make a female companion for the creature.
He does. Reluctantly, he starts the work. But then he's overcome by this fear. What if they reproduce? What if they unleash a race of monsters on humanity?
Mm.
And he destroys the female creature before it's complete.
Which pushes the creature over the edge for good.
Yes. That's when the creature delivers that incredibly chilling promise, I shall be with you on your wedding night.
And Victor, tragically, completely misinterprets it. He thinks the creature is coming for him.
He arms himself, prepares to fight for his own life on his wedding night, leaving Elizabeth vulnerable.
And the creature kills Elizabeth,
yeah,
fulfilling the vow in the most devastating way possible.
It breaks Victor completely. His sole focus now becomes revenge, chasing the creature across the globe.
Which leads them to the Arctic, back to where the story frame began with Captain Walton.
Right. Victor is rescued by Walton's ship, tells his story, and then dies, still consumed by vengeance, never really fully accepting his own fault in it all.
But Walton does learn something.
Yes. Walton is also an ambitious man, pushing his crew into dangerous territory for the sake of discovery. But hearing Victor's story, seeing the wreck of this brilliant man destroyed by unchecked ambition,
he makes a different choice.
He turns the ship around. He chooses safety, responsibility to his crew, over his personal ambition. He learns the lesson Victor tragically embodies, but never internalizes.
And Victor's last words to Walton basically spell it out, don't they?
They do. Seek happiness and tranquility and avoid ambition, even if it be only the apparently innocent one of distinguishing yourself in science and discoveries. It's a direct warning.
So the enduring relevance It seems pretty clear we're still grappling with these questions today, aren't we?
Yeah.
With AI, genetic engineering.
Absolutely. The power to create, the potential consequences, the ethical lines. Shelley was anticipating these debates over 200 years ago. What responsibility do we have for the technologies we unleash?
It forces us to look at our own potential for prejudice, too. Judging by surfaces, fearing the other.
Mm-hmm. And the fundamental idea that creation demands a moral contract. You can't just make something, whether it's life or a powerful new tool, and then walk away from the consequences.
Neglecting what you create that's presented as the real monstrosity, and maybe the only antidote is compassion, connection.
Well said. The need to see beyond the surface, to take responsibility, that's the timeless power of Frankenstein.
This conversation ends here. We'll meet again with another unique work of world literature. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.